Welcome to Truth News Radio Australia. It's Thursday the 6th of May 2010 and I am your host for tonight. My name's Hereward Fenton and you're listening to an Australian-made podcast which tries to get around the complete blockade on factual information provided by the corporate-owned mass media. And we have been doing this for a couple of years now. We try to get into the topics that are really, really important, and we've got a whole lot of them tonight. In the Twitter stream on Truth News, we've got a number of stories, and I'm going to lead tonight, actually, with the story from Greece, which is, to me, really indicative of the true situation of where we're headed with the world and the new world order. Or the New World Disorder, as it may be called. The Greek situation has deteriorated over the last few days due to the fact that the gang of thugs known as the IMF and their banking elites have decided to basically crush the people of Greece with the terms of their bailout. Because the Greek economy had collapsed. Well, they offered to bail out the Greek economy, but it came with certain catches. And the one of the terms was austerity measures. And yes. Welcoming Josh to the show to discuss this.
Austerity measures, the new catchphrase. It was like sexed up dossiers or, these sort of catchphrases that are just thrown about. All of a sudden they come out of nowhere.
Don't they? I mean, and, I've been hearing this phrase now for the past week. And it started in Latvia. There are a few other countries where they've done it. This is an agenda. This is a consistent plan. Now, what are they doing? Are they trying to exterminate humanity? Because basically...
Well, what does it mean? Let's break that down. What does austerity measures mean?
Well, indeed. Let's Google the word austerity, shall we? Let's just see if we can quickly get that up on Google.
People are writing and going nuts in Greece. That a lot of people are very upset because what basically is happening now is that food is getting ridiculously expensive. People can't pay their bills. They're losing their jobs like mad.
Indeed.
And then now, you have these austerity measures.
It says here on Wikipedia, it's ironic, there is actually a definition here which matches it exactly. I do think the word austerity comes from religious background because, austerities were actually things that monks did, where you actually would wear a hair shirt or where you would starve yourself or do things like that. They actually call them austerities. But Wikipedia actually has an entry. This may have been recently created, I don't know. In economics, austerity is when a government reduces its spending and or increases user fees to pay back creditors. Austerity is usually required when a government's fiscal deficit spending is felt to be unsustainable. Well, that may be true in the current usage of the word, but historically, it's basically meant starving yourself, right? And it really does mean taking you to
raise taxes and lower benefits.
The prices go up, your money goes down, and the consequences you're going to be hungry. Okay, I mean that's the inevitable result. If it achieves the result that they want, people are going to be hungry, and the people's quality of life is going to go down. People are going to die. Okay, I mean let's just make this absolutely clear. I really want this to be clear for the future, right? In case someone listens to this podcast 10 years or 20 years from now. That we said this was going to happen, right? It's not a joke. That they're actually, this is the beginning of what has been predicted.
When people talk about these millions and trillions and bankers' bailouts, you get this air of, it's from another world. It's just trillions of dollars. It's nothing to do with me. I've got my job and I do my thing. Look, folks, this is real money. It's actually not real. It's not gold and silver. It's just funny money. It's actually just paper and credits and stuff. But what we're seeing here is the actual effects of this cartel of bankers and playing with governments and having control of governments through their through debt. And what you're seeing here is, I mean, you know, it's not just one thing, food and everything going up in price in terms of an inflationary problem, but you're also seeing, if I have some invoices that I can't pay because I've got invoices that are owed to me, and that person can't pay them because he's got invoices owing to him, and he's, you know, and it follows all the way through the line, and you basically can't even pay your bills because all the way through the food chain, people owe each other, and so what's happened is the line of credit, because at the end of that line is usually a bank loan, is usually someone borrowing something, and when the banks run out, that's when the cash flow stops. Now, that is in a debt-based society. That's in a debt-based system where any money that comes into existence from a debt, from a bank. So it comes into existence from a mortgage, a new mortgage or a business loan. And what we're seeing now is that drying up. And on top of that, you have this inflationary pressure of stuff becoming worth, more compared to paper currency.
Let's just cut to the chase, okay? Because that all sounds a bit complex and a bit abstract. What's going to happen is people are going to die, folks. I mean, this is okay.
It's not a laughing matter. Just the way you put it.
It's happened in Russia. The average life expectancy of Russia went from like the late, 70 to 80 to now 55. That is the average life expectancy in Russia since the economic collapse and the austerity measures which were forced on the Russian people after the end of the Cold War and the collapse of that economy. The Russian people are being depopulated, right? There is a massive population decrease happening in Russia. The same thing is going to happen in Europe because the birth rate is already very low. It's way below replacement level, and people are going to start dying younger. This is an inevitable fact of what's going to happen with what they are doing. It's not a joke when we talk about depopulation and extermination, because that is what these banksters and what these criminal thugs, these rapists, these pillagers of society are actually trying to bring about. So many people have predicted this. So many people like Salente and Alex Jones and all these other people who for years have been talking this, it's now happening according to program, folks.
Yeah. And, people that say, oh, look, that people wouldn't do that, people wouldn't orchestrate this. Well, people orchestrate financial wars on countries all the time. I mean, there's a great book called The Economic Hitman. I've forgotten.
Yeah, the Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Yeah.
Basically, if a big corporation or a big banking elite or a government wants to take control of some sort of resource, they just crush their economy, and it's very scientific. I mean, it's an old trick, and it's quite easy to do, and you can do it with currency manipulations, with using market tools like shorting, and using just pumping millions into a short and then just selling it, and stuff like that, where you're basically using these instruments of the markets that countries just can't handle anymore, or you do it over long periods of time, and you see it collapsing in other ways like we're having here in Greece now. America's in a just as dodgy, a lot of people think, oh, look, the Dow's up and the we're seeing the markets are up in America and all this and that, and the American dollar's up from the euro, and you know, America's out of the boiling water. Well, it's actually wrong. I mean, you're seeing America's up from the euro, but both currencies are down on the dollar, on the actual currency, which is gold. Sorry, not the dollar. So yeah, we're seeing gold, you know, absolutely pretty much every paper currency going down compared to gold, and you know, why is that? Well, that's because we're seeing too much printing going on in the past 2-3 years, and I think, you know, the other thing with Greece that we have to really be careful of now is that, well, Greece is getting this bailout. So what does that mean for Spain, Portugal, and other European countries? Well, what does that mean? Well, they'll get bailed out too, and that's not a given. But that's how those countries will see it. So they can just go, oh, we can breathe easy now. We'll just get this. The problem is they'll see the riots and stuff happening in Greece, and they'll think, well, it's not that easy. You can't just get bailed out, you know.
The bailout is a total con. The bailout is not a bailout. The bailout is a trick. You see, Iceland didn't get bailed out. The people there are much better off. What they've done here, what they've done in these other countries, is a total con.
Yep.
And it's all about consolidating the power of the new power bloc of the globalists. That's what they're doing. And part of the agenda of the globalists is the new world order that completely crushes you and me. It completely obliterates the little guy. It's the most brutal regime. It makes the Nazis look like clumsy incompetence. This new regime they want to bring in is 100% more cold and more ruthless and more brutal than anything that the fascists or the Nazis could have thought of. And well, we've got proof of this.
Let's extrapolate that, because a lot of people will take offence to that. And
look at what they're doing in Afghanistan. Look at what they're doing
in
Iraq.
Brutal. It's
look at what they've done in Iraq.
What it is that, you know, instead of using bullets and guns and soldiers, we're using currency. Well, not we, but they are using currencies.
They'll use bullets and soldiers and guns as well. They are using.
You know,
all
after these riots, they'll say, "Oh, look, the people need to get controlled." And usually, what happens in financial turmoils, people put on uniforms, and that's really what's you know, in terms of Europe, you just don't want that again.
You absolutely don't. Okay, look, we've got a few more stories to get through, and we've actually got a guest coming on in about 15 minutes, so I just want to get through a couple more stories. There's several the kind of stories that in this country we don't sort of have the rioting and the people being killed and stuff. And what we have in Australia is signs of creeping, disgusting, creeping totalitarianism that wheedles its way into government policy, quite often through academic circles. And I just want to read you this story, which I only discovered yesterday myself, of an academic report from the University of Adelaide that wants to bring in breath testing for pedestrians.
Hmm.
Now, you might think, oh, gee, that sounds like a good idea. Breath testing, yeah, because people get drunk and they can't walk properly, like just people who can't drive properly. But this particular idea, and I'm just going to read the article from Adelaide now here. University of Adelaide study suggests pedestrians be breath tested. Adelaide Now readers are overwhelmingly opposed to the idea of pedestrians being breath tested, as suggested by a University of Adelaide study. At 1 p.m., 82% of 963 poll votes rejected the idea. While many commenters simply cried nanny state, some had valid arguments against... Well, I think that's a valid argument, nanny state in itself.
Yeah, I know.
some had valid arguments against pedestrian breath testing. Now, let's just get to the meat of this story. The University of Adelaide found that the public could support a blood alcohol limit of 0.15 when near roads and vehicles if it saved some of the approximately 10 drink-walking pedestrians who die each year on South Australian roads. Researchers studied ways of stopping the problem, which would all be limited in their success, except for the enforcement of a blood alcohol level in people walking near traffic. Now, what they're proposing here, folks, is that you know, it would be just like when you're in your car, but this time you're just walking down your street, and you could be just coming out the door of your house, you could be anywhere, right? And the policeman would come, wee-woo, come up to you, you know, excuse me, we pull over, right? And if you don't, that's the way the random system works. If you don't pull over, that's a crime to start off with. If you refuse to be tested, that's a crime. So the whole system that they're saying this should be based on is already based on completely depriving you of your liberty, completely making you a subject of the state, like a prisoner in a prison, and you can't do anything about it. Now, the fact is that this has been introduced through an academic report, through a respected group that is referred to by the government. And, of course, this time it's probably not going to get up. But a few years ago, there was an academic group out of Macquarie University who said we should legalise torture, right? And these people need to be exposed. And, you know, seriously, if we...
Well, look, the thing is, a lot of... And I hate to say this because I've got a lot of friends in academia as well, but let's just cut to the chase.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, let's cut to the
academia
chase.
Academia is funded by government, primarily. Academia, when Marx kept on going on about the classes, he had it all wrong. But there are classes. There are the productive class, and then there is the parasitical class. And you know, I hate to say it, but that government is a massive parasite, and so is academia. They just sit there and they wallow in their ivory towers, getting money from taxes of hard-earned productive citizens. And so do artists and all sorts of, you know, but these people, they sit there and they think, well, you know, what can we do to please our overlord paymasters, which is the government? And they come up with ridiculously, you know, I mean, that not always, of course. And some things that come out of academia, a lot of good things come out of academia, of course. But a lot of it is mainly to do with the military. A lot of it is to do with, you know, stuff. I mean, stuff like this. I mean, this is absurd.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it could even get up, the fact that it could be taken seriously, the fact that it wouldn't be just laughed off the first time someone proposed it is really worrying to me, Josh, you know? It's like, I know this particular proposal will probably, you know, be forgotten, but the fact that it got as far as it did, it's just really, really worrying. And we at Truth News are one of the few voices that is actually going to be expressing the outrage that everyone would feel when you read about this. But, you know, it's not going, the media isn't going to focus on it. I mean, Adelaide Now actually does have a record of exposing some of these things, and good on them. I mean, they've actually they've exposed quite a few outrageous things. So I think there's a few decent people in that outfit. It's up to us. You know, like if I had a team of a camera team, I'd love to be able to go down to Adelaide and sit outside that guy's office and film him coming out and fire all these questions at him that we're asking now and just capture him on camera. Because you know what we get? We get a guilty look. We get someone who knows that he's corrupt, knows that he's been bought, knows that it's bullshit, but did it because he wanted to keep his job or whatever, you know? Just like Phil Jones did in front of the committee in the UK.
If you give up your liberties for security, you don't get it. You don't get security. You get tyranny.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
And
that's what it is. We should ban driving cars next. We should just ban everything and wrap everyone in cotton wool.
Yeah. I mean, if they're going to ban people walking down the street drunk, well, why limit it to the street? Why won't they come into your house? I mean, there's absolutely no reason why they wouldn't come into your house.
And,
sure, if you're drunk at home, you could trip over. I mean, you know, you could get angry and hurt someone because people, when they get drunk, can be violent. There'd be all kinds of reasons why they might want to random breath test you in your home. If you accept that they're going to random breath test you in the street, you've got to accept they're going to random breath test you in your home.
Well, let's ban also just other dangerous activity like bungee jumping or kite surfing, surfing in general, because you could drown. Let's ban hang gliding, and this is what I'm coming at. After a while, it's like, just step off, mate. I choose to get drunk, and I choose to take the risk of being killed from it. And A, you're probably, you know, if you drink long term for a very long time, you're probably going to die of liver psoriasis or something like that anyway. You know, but there are plenty of risks involved in drinking. People are smart enough to know the risks, and they're going to take the risk. That's part of being free, folks.
Okay, beautifully said, Josh. Second outrageous, obnoxious story for tonight from Australia. Unborn
Jeez,
babies.
We're just piling them on tonight.
Oh, yeah, we're really upsetting it. And we've got a great interview coming up in about 7 minutes with a really important vaccine story, a personal story. That's also going to be troubling but really important. Anyway, I just want to quickly run through this story. Unborn babies seized from unfit Perth mothers. This is from 1st of May 2010, news.com.au. Expectant mums to undergo drug tests. Failure could mean removal of unborn child. Department says it identifies at-risk mums. Babies are being seized by the government for child protection before they are even born. The Sunday Times can reveal the department has started scrutinising expectant mothers they fear might be unfit to care for a baby. Under the radical new government policy, would-be mothers who are 20 weeks or more pregnant are being forced to give urine samples to show they are drug-free and prove that they have permanent accommodation. If the expectant mother fails to satisfy child protection officers, they immediately start child removal procedures. Wow.
My God.
I mean, we had Kevin Rudd go down to Canberra and apologise for the stolen generation.
Yeah.
A year and a half ago, making us believe that was some terrible thing that happened generations ago. And now we have this story. They're doing it right now.
And, you know, we all want the best for the unborn. We all want the best for the next generation. On one hand, you got the government giving out a baby bonus, which primarily goes to the to people more in the financial situation that would really need $1,000. I mean, $1,000 to someone, to some people, is a lot of money. And so they'll be like, oh, let's have a baby because we get an extra $1,000. I mean, those sort of people are more inclined to have a lot of stresses in life. And I hate to be generalist, but generally speaking, we'll have a few more issues. And on the other hand, they're saying we're going to take babies.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just the inconsistencies. And again, there's this underlying agenda going on. We could call it a disease. I don't know. Call it what you will. It's an agenda which we see globally. We see it locally. And it's this brutal state. It's like the new parent religion of worshipping the state and the state having total power.
Yeah, and like the state can't do no wrong. I mean, imagine growing up being a ward of the state. I mean, I know some wards of states, and they are really, you know, a lot of them are really messed up from growing up as the government, as their parents. And a lot of them try really hard to get on with their life and stuff, but they've got real issues that they have to work really, really hard on breaking. And I really feel for them, you know. And I'm not saying that's always the case, but 99% of the time, you know, the government really doesn't do very well at parenting.
They don't, because the government is just an anonymous bureaucracy. It's not a person, okay? It's a complete false paradigm to think that the state could be your parent, even if you did want to have a parent. Okay, I mean you're an adult.
What are they testing for? Do they even say?
Well, according to this story, there's a terrible scourge of women with drug addiction problems who are having babies. Now, that may be true in certain communities. I mean, I know that this does occur.
But all pregnant women should go get the vaccine drug.
Well, yeah, they're giving these vaccines to pregnant women, exactly. And we know that that is a major risk factor. We know that it's a risk factor. It's in the literature. The government and the marketing arm of the big pharma just rides roughshod over little things like medical facts.
You know, but if someone, you know, has smoked some pot or something like that, well, got to steal their baby.
Well, that's right. That's right. And
I'm not saying these people don't need help, you know. I'm not saying that they should just be left to, you know, be abusive parents either, you know, but we as a community need to become tighter and help each other and not, you know, just to rely on some big mammoth Ubermaster government that just nannies every part of our lives.
There was a philosophical.
Kidnaps. I mean, that's just absurd.
There was a philosophical theory and a movement that went with it in the 1930s called the eugenics movement. And what we see happening today is merely a resurgence of the eugenics belief systems. It's not new, but it's in new clothing, and it appears to always have this you know, which we're trying to take care of you guys, right? But, I mean, this is eugenics. Even though, you know, they say, well, they're trying to protect the child, this one of the options that they will offer to these women is abortion. You see, a lot of these women will actually be encouraged to abort their babies. In fact, it even says that in the article. And that's why this, you know, some of the civil liberties groups are particularly objecting to it. Because, the Department of Community Services honchos are going to be saying to these people, you know, you're not fit to be a mother and everything, but you can always abort your child if you want, you know. You have the choice, you know, the woman's choice. Can you see how cold and diabolical and utterly ruthless that is? This pretense that women have choice, while at the same time, well, they have choice to kill their babies if they want, but we'll take the baby away from you if we don't think you're going to be a good mother, but you can kill it if you want. That's really crazy, isn't it?
Hey, we got a fantastic letter the other day, Herod. Have you got that on hand? I'd love to read out. It's a letter of the week.
It's an excellent letter. I tell you what, we're going to have to read it after this interview because it's up in the next 30 seconds, but we will remind me of that at the end of the show.
Yeah.
Okay, stand by. We've got an interview coming up. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. In this section of the show, it's my great honour to have on the show Stephanie Messenger speaking to us from Brisbane. Stephanie is a woman who lost a child to a vaccine, and her story is actually available through a PDF file, which I received by email, and well, we'll put that up on the site. It's a particularly heartbreaking story, and I invited Stephanie to come on the show because we've done several shows on the theme of vaccination, and recently it's been in the news, and there's been this latest scandal over the flu vaccines. There's been another death in Brisbane. There's been dozens of reactions, hundreds of reported ones, and we don't know how many out there that haven't been reported. And it really is a total outrage, I think, when we hear people from the government, like representatives from the health department, saying, oh, we have no evidence that this has got anything to do with vaccines. You know, there's no chance that any of this has got anything to do with vaccines. When we have interviews with people on the ABC and, you know, quite detailed reports that make it quite clear that these kids are reacting to the vaccine. So on that note, I'd just like to welcome Stephanie to the show.
Okay, thank you.
Stephanie, you know, just one thing before we get into your story, one thing that really I think people should bear in mind about this is that when someone, regardless of what your overall philosophical position is on vaccines, if there is an individual who has a bad reaction to a vaccine, it is the absolute duty of the doctors and the hospitals and everyone concerned to record that and make sure that that is noted, that that person is allergic to that vaccine and never has that vaccine again. It's like, for example, if you were allergic to penicillin, you would, if you had a reaction and then it'd be noted, then you'd never get penicillin again. It would be on your medical record. But this doesn't seem to occur with vaccines. They don't even want to admit that there is such a thing as people having an allergic reaction to the vaccine. And it's quite outrageous in when you think about it, were it not for the fact that we know that there is an awful lot of money and political prestige tied up in it. Over to you, Stephanie.
Well, yeah, look, the problem seems to be in this country that they just really don't want to admit to any vaccine reactions because they know that it does affect other parents wanting to do that. But in places like the United States where they have a compensation fund, then doctors fairly readily do admit to vaccine damage because they are immune from being sued by parents anymore. So it's the same vaccines. The reactions are happening over there and admitted to, and here they're just in denial. So it is definitely about money and about them keeping their position, and it's very sad for what is happening to children in this country.
It really is quite ruthless, isn't it? I mean, it's And for the profit motive, you know, it's just, it's hard to understand it unless you really do have to change the way you, you know, we tend to give people credit for not being that ruthless. We tend to find it hard to believe that they could just deny medically, you know, clear information merely because they're caught up in the power and the prestige and the money. Have you actually, you know, had a chance to speak with many other parents who've had problems and understand the scope of this?
I have. I've spoken to many, many parents over the years, and I get parents on the phone that will tell me their children's symptoms, and of course I never say that, yes, that's, you know, absolutely for sure it's a vaccine reaction, but the parents are feeling that it is, yet the medical profession don't want to investigate it, so they just bob it off as something else. But the parents know, you know, that it happened right at the time, or, you know, very, very quickly after the vaccination, and they, you know, these were perfectly healthy children when they went in, and then they come out, or a short time later, their children are damaged. And it's happening very often, and that's just the very few people that know that I'm around to call me. I mean, there's you know, obviously millions of people that don't know that I'm around and doing what I'm doing, which is passing on information to parents so that they can make an informed decision. But, yeah, very
indeed.
Often.
Indeed. And do you, we'll put information on the show notes afterwards. Do you actually, you know, can you help people, if people are listening, perhaps who live in Queensland, can they get in touch with you through your website? Is there a website here? There's a few websites.
Well, we're just putting a website together, naturematters.info. But they can call me, that's for sure, or email me and let me know. I am taking down people's reactions. We do have a day of remembrance for the people who are damaged or have passed on from vaccinations, and that's February the 16th. We kicked it off this year, actually, just so that the public would have some awareness of what is happening to people out there.
Great, great. And have you been following closely the latest wave of reactions? And is there anything new you can tell us about about that? Because I know that there was one death in Queensland, and that there's been hundreds of reported reactions.
There have been, and the reactions are now, you know, in. I heard some reactions from Victoria and from South Australia. So, you know, this whole notion that it was a particular batch really has gone out the window. They're not really saying very much about it at the moment. Sometimes it takes quite a long time for the coroners to do their job. But the problem is we've yet to see any of the cases where there have been deaths where they've come out and said that that was conclusively what it was. They just will not, you know, I don't hold any hope that that's going to happen this time either, because they do not want people to know that there are deaths from vaccinations, because, you know, they do know that that does affect the whole vaccination program, not just the particular vaccine that has been implicated that time. So it has been very quiet in the last few days, but I think it was Saturday they had one of the doctors on saying that, you know, just make sure it doesn't, you know, affect your thoughts about any other vaccine. So they're already going into damage control about it.
Yes, indeed.
And, you know, what they generally do whenever there is any press about the dangers of vaccination, then the media follows that up for some weeks with horror stories about diseases, and just tonight I saw advertised something, I think, that's going to be on 60 Minutes this coming Sunday about some killer virus that they've found in Africa. You know, they just have to really crank up the fear again to get people to become more, you know, falling into line with it all again, and that's what seems to happen. It's a never-ending cycle.
Well, we would like to help spearhead a growing movement. I mean, we want to do our bit to increase awareness, to get people to put pressure on their government, on their healthcare providers, and to talk about it on the street as much as possible. And I just want to stress for our listeners, you know, this is not just a question of whether you believe in vaccinations or not, because even if you believe in vaccinations, When they deny that there is such a thing as a bad reaction, it's just going another step further. It's just it really highlights the poor scientific approach. It highlights the lack of professionalism. Wouldn't you say, Stephanie?
Oh, absolutely. Look, what we encourage people to do is get the product insert, and that is the, you know, piece of paper that the drug company puts out that accompanies the vaccination, which most parents never even see. In fact, a lot of them don't even know it exists. And they need to read that very carefully, because that is what the drug company wants people to know, what can happen to your child if you allow the child to have that particular injection. And one of the problems is that there are many things written on that product insert, but still the doctors are denying when parents show up with that reaction in their child. They'll say, oh, no, it's still nothing to do with it. And it is. It's a direct link to the vaccine, and the drug companies admit to it, but the doctors just refuse to. And I think a lot of them the doctors don't even read the product inserts. They just... It's basically blind faith that they have in this particular intervention, and they don't want to look at it sideways, because if they do, then they've got to really question what they do. And so instead of looking into it, they decide not to, so that they don't ever have to, their conscience doesn't ever have to play a part in what they're doing.
Extraordinary. Something that you know, justice has to be done. The deaths, the injury that goes on, that's gone on for decade after decade. There is a movement, and I do believe we will in the end triumph over this.
Oh, I do too, because the truth does come out. It's just very sad to know how many children are going to be severely damaged and die because of it. And, you know, one of the things is, for instance, encephalopathy will be one of the reactions. And if a child dies from that, that's what goes down on the death certificate, not the vaccination which caused it. So, if there was any truth at any time, they would be looking back through all of the medical records for all of these children who have died and see what they really did die from, the true cause, not the result of the cause.
Indeed.
But I don't really hold much hope that will ever happen. It's about parents. I mean, our group runs because we know that parents have a thirst for the information because they want to do what's best for their children, and people who vaccinate think they are, and parents who don't vaccinate think they're doing the best for their children as well. So we continue just to supply as much information so that parents can make a truly informed decision. With all of the information. We have a list of questions for them to take to a doctor. We want them to go to doctors, but we want them to get the information from all sources and then use their common sense and try to put fear aside, because fear is obviously the driving emotion in doing this.
Mm. Yes. Thanks for that. That's a really great way of, you've articulated it there really, really clearly. Now, Stephanie, would you be able to go through the story of your son? I've read the document here. It was really it really was painful to read, and I think it would be great if you could just go through that, and then we might just have a few more questions. But I think this story, we actually haven't really had a chance to talk to anyone who's had this personal experience before, so I think it's quite important for all our listeners too.
Yeah, okay, well, I have put my story out there for not so much to shock people, just to really let people know that this really does happen. And I've just decided I'm one parent who's not going to let it be swept under the rug. I really do want parents to take note that this is a possibility. What happened with my child was I did take him for his vaccinations at 2 months of age, or he was a little bit past that, and he did have a very bad reaction. The doctor told me on the day that was normal. I called her sort of within about an hour of him having his vaccinations. And she said that was normal and he'd be fine in a couple of days, which he was. He did come around in a few days. And I went back 2 months after that and did it again, and he had a far worse reaction, the same as before, but 10 times worse, febrile convulsions and projectile vomiting, seizures, all sorts of things was happening to that little fellow. And doctors once again said, look, he'll be fine in a few days. Well, he didn't. He never, ever recovered from that. And in fact, he went backwards. That was at 4 months of age. And he passed away at 15 months of age, but he was still like a four-month-old or even less than that, really. He wasn't rolling over or doing any of the things that he was doing by 4 months.
Right. So
he had regressed quite a bit.
Yeah.
And it took him that long to fade away. So I was in, the Prince of Wales Hospital in Sydney for quite a lot of that time with him, just watching him fading away and watching children come and go with all different sorts of things. And they came and got better, and my little fellow didn't. He just basically withered away to the point where he was, went from being, he was 9 pounds 12 when he was born, and he was much less than that when he passed away at 15
really?
Months.
God,
I have people say to me, oh, you haven't seen a child suffering from whooping cough. Well, I've seen a child wither away over 11 months, so...
Most
of the children who do get whooping cough do survive.
Yeah.
So
what was the diagnosis of your child?
Well, look, after so many tests and they did lots of biopsies and things under anaesthetics, but at the end of the day they came to me and said, look, we really don't know what's happening to your child. And they had just completely disregarded what I had told them about him having his vaccines and his reactions and things. And once we got to hospital, that was never, ever mentioned. And they basically told me that they didn't know why he was deteriorating as he would, but he'd only have a couple of months to live.
Right.
And at the time, my mother was really quite angry about it because she'd known all the tests that he'd had, and she said, you know, you people have been guinea-pigging on this baby for all of these months. I can't believe that you don't know something.
Right.
And at that point, the older doctors, there was four doctors there that day, the two older ones who said that they don't know what was happening, they actually stepped back, and then two younger ones stepped forward and said, oh, well, it could be this condition called Alexander's disease.
Right.
And then they went on this tangent of Alexander's disease describing this particular condition, and they advised me at that time that I should never have any more children because it can be one in four children that can be like this. Now, I was just 20 years old at the time, and they had advised me that my child was dying in the next few months.
Yes.
And I should not have any more children, because if I did, basically, that would be my fault because I've been told.
How outrageous. And you've since had healthy children, haven't you?
I have had three more children, and they're all incredibly healthy, and none of them have had any vaccinations, and they haven't had any of the childhood diseases that their vaccinated friends have had. And I'm very glad that I didn't listen to those doctors, and I always remember them saying it could be.
Yes.
Not that it is, it could be. And it just so happened that I had my sister-in-law at the time worked for a doctor, and she got me the medical books and showed me what it said about Alexander's disease. And my son had about two symptoms of a whole string of symptoms that were in that medical book.
Right.
And they were very general things like projectile vomiting and convulsions.
Right.
So they, the young doctors stepped up to say things because they knew that they should have had an answer.
Yeah.
But they didn't have an answer. The older doctors were perhaps telling the truth that they didn't know, although that's questionable as well, because I had already told, when I admitted him to the hospital, I'd told them all about the vaccination part of it, but that was never, ever mentioned again.
And at that time, were you already convinced that the vaccine was the cause of his deterioration? I mean, you'd seen it.
Oh, because he reacted on the day.
On the day,
The first time he reacted within an hour, and the second time he reacted nearly straight away.
And his illness began from that point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Before that, he was incredibly healthy. Yeah, never cried or anything. He didn't even ever throw up. He was very healthy, robust little fellow. Mm. So no, I have absolutely no doubt in the world. And as a mother who's lost a child, you want to know for sure.
Yes.
And if you're not sure, you wouldn't be, you know, saying that that's what it is. You would be continuing on your journey to find what it is. But I know for sure that that's what happened to my child. And I since got the product inserts years later.
Yeah.
I got the product inserts, and all of his reactions are listed in there.
Right. That's
so
interesting.
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind at all.
Now, At the time, and you were pretty young, you probably would have believed in vaccines at that time when he was initially, given the vaccine. Just curious to know, when did you become sceptical of vaccination in general?
Well, I didn't believe in vaccinations really at the time. Didn't believe or disbelieve.
Yeah.
I knew that they were given at school and things. I remember them coming around to school and giving us the polio thing when I was about six or seven or something. But apart from that, I didn't really have a belief in them or disbelief in them. I just was told to go and do this, and I did it without questioning it one little bit. I was a very complacent young parent. I just did what I was told to do.
Just a trust in authority, like most people have a trust in authority. It's perfectly normal.
Probably. Yeah. But I, after my experience, of course, I had declared to myself that I was never going to do that again. But the problem then was that I was very fearful of the disease. So, you know, I was then living totally in fear of the children getting a disease. And I decided at that point that I had better go and get some information and read all about it. And that was started my journey on looking at it. And I did see a program on television where they had a lot of children on who were vaccine damaged, and they looked exactly like my child, exactly like him. So that started a real long journey even before I had my next child. And it took quite a long time though until I was really comfortable with the decision. And my comfort with the decision really came because I started studying natural health and what disease was all about. So I got to the point where I started to embrace disease, not fear it. And that was a giant step for me to do that.
Great. We've just got a break coming up, Stephanie, and we'll get right back into some more questions in a moment.
Okay.
Truth News Radio Australia with your hosts, Heriwood Fenton and Joshua Jackson. You can subscribe to Truth News by going to truthnews.com.au and clicking the RSS feed, or using iTunes to catch the show every week.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio. Tonight I'm interviewing Stephanie Messenger, a Queensland woman who lost a child to vaccination and is now a campaigner and someone who can provide help and support to people who've suffered vaccine injury. And we'll have all the details on our show notes. And I'd just like to welcome back to the discussion Josh Jackson. Are you there, Josh?
I am, yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, no, it's a very, very touching story and one of many that I've come across, sadly, over the years of looking into this. And this is why we keep bringing this subject up, because it's not just some pie-in-the-sky theories. These are actual real people having real consequences. And, you know, for instance, a friend of mine, his wife just last week just decided to take her child to the doctor, and just the doctor said, "Oh, by the way, you should probably just get the next round of vaccines." Sure, okay, you know. And my mate got pretty angry at that, because she didn't even bother asking. There's just this sort of blind eye, yeah. And she went home and she was vomiting all night for two nights in a row. This poor girl, you know, and they went to the doctor and said, "Oh, it's got nothing to do with the vaccines."
Extraordinary.
It just goes on and on like that. So I really encourage people, if they have had problems with vaccines, to find out if there's a register, because I'm sure there is, and maybe Stephanie knows more about where complaints can be, issued, or symptoms at least. So that people can, or if there's websites and stuff.
Is there a register that people can, have confidence that their details will be stored and, you know, made available, Stephanie? Is it?
Yeah, there is one. There is a national one, but we don't really ever hear of what comes of any of the reactions. I don't have that information right with me at the moment, but there is a national 1-300 number. And we are taking down reactions as well, so that we can at some point present them to the government and say, you know, you need to have a look at this. But there is some sort of reporting system. But the problem is that people are encouraged to go back to their doctor, but then if the doctors don't recognise that as a symptom, it's not until there's a whole lot of them happening that a lot of doctors will even take note of the symptoms. So it really needs to be that the parents can directly report before I think we're going to have any shift in it, because the doctors are very one-eyed about it, unfortunately.
I mean, it reminds me of a lot of the tobacco debacle of the 50s and 60s. When, you know, doctors recommended smoking to people, you know, said it was healthy for asthma and such. And the amount of the type of excuses that came up linking, saying, "Oh, it's so hard to, you know, connect smoking with lung cancer," how ridiculous. And and the typical one that I just can't stand is, "Oh no, that's just that's just a story. That's just one person's story."
Josh, we're just having a bit of trouble with your volume. It's actually way much higher than Stephanie's. I'm going to have a bit of trouble with this.
Okay,
maybe you could just pull back a little from the microphone. Sorry about that.
Is that better?
Yeah, it's a bit better. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, and so, you know, this sort of thing that, this is just, there's no hard conclusive evidence here. This is just, someone's story, and this is just one case. And these sort of ridiculous notions where, if this is just one case, that should just be one enough to cause a lot of money or a lot of people to flood together to pull all their stories together and have actually a proper investigation.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, there's just so much money in it, and one of the problems is that it's just a revolving thing. People get injured from vaccination, and then the doctors put them on drugs to treat the symptoms, and then they have symptoms to do with those drugs, and it goes on and on and on. And I have a lot of people come to me who they have vaccinated their first child, and because of what's happened, and often they're not horror stories. They might be just that the parents, you know, didn't like that the child had a fever, so they got scared. So then they got information and decided not to vaccinate subsequent children. And all of the other children in the family are all very robust, happy, healthy children, but that one vaccinated child, and it could be that they only ever had one round of vaccinations, but they're continually sick. So it takes a long time for that to get out of their system, if it ever does. And but you know, when you're talking about so much money, it's something, and the belief system that because it's the general population has been totally brainwashed that this is such a good thing. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I saw Georgie Parker on television the other night talking about how she was just in, I think it was Cambodia, and the people were lining up to be vaccinated, and they treat it as a privilege. Yeah. Well, they treat it as a privilege because they're very ignorant about it all. They've been totally brainwashed as well. It's not a privilege to be poisoned or to poison your children.
No, yeah, and there's not 1 ounce of, you know, talk about nutrition or you know, getting proper nutrition.
I'd
like to talk a bit about the theoretical concepts behind the way vaccines work, because we've talked about this a few times. I want to bring it up again because it appears that the nub of this, when you get right down to it, is that the substances they put in these vaccines that they call adjuvants, that are toxic substances that stimulate the immune system, are both the active ingredient in the vaccine and the cause of so many of the medical disasters from the vaccines, because the adjuvants are toxic substances, and it doesn't really matter whether it's mercury or some other squalene or whatever it is they use. The concept behind what they're doing is they're putting toxins into your bloodstream to stimulate your immune system. I mean, does that sound roughly right to you, Stephanie?
It does. But look, there is absolutely no scientific proof. All that the vaccine does, no matter what's in it, all it does is raise an antibody level in the majority of people. Now, sometimes that's a very short-lived raised antibody level, but there's no scientific proof that a raised antibody level equates to immunity. There is absolutely none, and I've been looking for it for 25 years. I've asked health minister after health minister here in Queensland to supply that, and they can never do it because there isn't any. And, you know, I do lots of public talks about this, and I'll have people say to me, well, at least, you know, a raised antibody level is, you know, one immune response. And I say, well, that's correct. It's one of at least a dozen immune responses that we have. But the problem is all of these chemicals and toxins and toxoids that are in the vaccine also lower the immune system. So it, you know, more than counters that one immune response out. And it just totally doesn't work. There's documented evidence time and time again that there's epidemics in nearly fully vaccinated communities, and it continually disproves the whole herd immunity. And then they deny things like autism are happening, that vaccines have anything to do with autism. It's just totally ridiculous that they continue to get away with that.
Total denial. And they even managed to get the Lancet, you know, highly respected scientific journal, to retract the one piece of research which had been supporting that view. I was discussing that on our last show, and it appears, I mean, it's almost unprecedented that a scientific journal would retract an article under that kind of pressure. When in fact the evidence and the research that was in that article wasn't contested. It was peripheral stuff that was it was certain things that the researcher did afterwards. Mm-hmm. It's just ridiculous. I mean,
the corruption just continues on and on every level. It is totally corrupt.
When I talk to friends, I often get about vaccines. I often get the comments like, "Oh yeah, well, don't you remember don't you remember polio at school? Oh no, that's right, we didn't have any because of the vaccines," and that's the sort of vibe that, and that's definitely what that comes up over and over again. Well, you know, we've wiped out major diseases because of vaccines. How do you respond to those sort of arguments?
Well, we haven't wiped them out because of those vaccines at all. Nearly every disease was more than 90% gone before any vaccination came in. That's very well documented. And in fact, I've actually heard doctors admit to that lately on different shows. So that's been interesting. They've done a shift with that because they knew that they couldn't continue to deny that because it is very well documented. So polio is a classic example of how the World Health Organization diddled the figures, because when they bought the polio vaccine into Australia, they also changed the diagnosis criteria for polio. So prior to 1956, you had to just have any symptoms of polio for more than 24 hours in order to be reported to the health department as a polio statistic. After 56, when they brought the vaccine to Australia and New Zealand, they changed it so that you had to be paralysed for 60 days in order to be reported to the health department. Now, of course, what happened was there were a lot of people who just had some polio symptoms, which were severe headaches and nausea and all of these sorts of things. The majority of people who had polio pre-56 didn't even have paralysis. So after 56, they had to be paralysed for 60 days, and that's actually still the diagnosis today. So if you have polio for 49 or 59 days, you actually don't have polio according to the criteria. You have to have it for 60 days in order to be reported to the health department. So it was all about diddling the figures. Aseptic meningitis is actually the same disease, and those figures went sky high after the vaccine came into Australia, because it is basically the same disease without the paralysis for 60 days.
Really?
It is. And smallpox and all of those things, they're not wiped out at all. And in fact, when they've done mass vaccination campaigns in there's one I was reading about in the Philippines, it actually caused a very big smallpox epidemic. The smallpox had been tapering out over the years, and they came and vaccinated with everyone, and then there was, you know, I can't think of the figure. 90,000 deaths comes to mind, but don't quote me on that. I'm not sure now if that's the exact figure. But there was many, many deaths and they attributed that to the vaccination. So there's quite a lot of documented cases of that as well. We've been just really hoodwinked to think that vaccinations got rid of anything. It hasn't. All the diseases were petering out throughout history, and then new organisms come forward and new diseases get created, and they hang around for, you know, a century or two, and then they peter out. That's what's happened throughout history.
And there's never any, you know, not big sort of campaigns spent by the government to say, hey, well, eat more organic raw food, have more fresh smoothies, have more, go for good regular exercise to build your immune system. No, it's always go straight to your doctor and get a vaccine, especially if you're pregnant.
That's right. Yes, well, they've been talking, I don't know about in other states, but for quite a while they were talking here about in Queensland how we have a shortage of doctors. And I was at a politician's office one day, and they asked me to sign this petition for more doctors. And I said, I don't think so. I mean, we've got far in excess of doctors. We need more the money needs to be spent on educating people on how to stay healthy, not more doctors to mask symptoms. And I was telling this young person in the office, the politician's office, that when doctors have gone on strike twice in the world, once in Israel and once in Los Angeles, and in both instances, the mortality rate drops significantly. And, that's what happens when doctors go on strike.
My God, isn't that a sad state of affairs? Because, you know, at the end of the day, people usually go into the medical professional for two reasons. One is for money. Oh, well, for three reasons. One is for money. One is because their family pressure them to become doctors or lawyers. And the third is more rare, but that they actually want to help people and they want to be healthy. And it's so sad to see that a lot of those doctors end up, very disillusioned because they end up, all they're doing is reading books sponsored by Big Pharma and becoming basic dispensers. Oh, I can't even say the word. But basically, they all they do is dispense drugs. And, I mean, that's the same with pharmacies. I mean, they hardly ever mix up herbs and never anymore. All they are is dispensing machines as well. And so the whole industry, all the way from doctors to, you know, the only sort of doctors left are specialists that actually, you know, don't just throw drugs at you, and a lot of the time they do as well. But specialists are also a little bit ludicrous because they just focus on one little section of your body without looking at the whole system. And so the whole, we in the Western world really have to, I mean, don't get me wrong, audience, we the Western medicine is also very fantastic. It's great at and if someone falls off their motorbike and putting them back together again and all this sort of stuff. But in terms of certain things, we're still very, very driven by a corrupt, government plus corporate sort of fascistic conglomerate mixes that we really need to study the information and not just have blind faith to a lot of the information that's given out by these corporations.
That is certainly true.
One of the problems I find with the medical industry as it is now, I don't think it's much of a profession anymore, but I think it's more of an industry. And I don't particularly blame the doctors, because what has happened is in this country is because of the litigation against doctors, their malpractice insurance has gone through the roof. So what has happened, you won't find a lot of doctors out there on their own in surgeries. They've joined these conglomerates or corporations where they have to push through a certain number of patients every day just to meet their corporate obligation for that centre. Right. So they don't have time to read medical journals or read extra information to further their education about what they're doing, which is very sad, because, we send people to doctors with a list of questions, and mostly the doctors can't answer. They can hardly answer any of the questions on the list, and then they become very angry with the people that have confronted them with these questions, and, they can't get them out of their surgeries fast enough. And it's really just not good enough, because parents do want to know the information. So
I agree. But you know what? The thing is, in the 1950s, we were stuck because we had the doctors and we had to go to them, or we had the authorities and we had to seek the authorities. Now we have this amazing tool, the internet. And I don't think there's, people are at a less of an excuse now, because people have to do their own research. You have to be in control of you can't be an expert at everything, but you can definitely take half an hour of your time or an hour to go and study some things before you take them. I mean, if I go to the doctor and they prescribe me a drug, I'll get the prescription, but I won't buy the drug just yet. I'll go home and I'll type that into Google and I'll do every bit of research first and weigh up what's what if I if well is it worth taking it And I think, you know, that's a really positive thing for humanity is in general, for those lucky enough to have access to the internet, that we can that we do have that power now to say, hey, you know, we don't need to just have blind faith of one doctor or one corporation. We can check it out for ourselves.
And that's terrific for adults to do. But one of the problems is that parents don't feel like they can do that. They feel that if they go to the doctor and the doctor tells them that the child needs to take this and they choose not to do it and something happens to the child, then they have the Department of Families knocking on their door. So they're between a rock and a hard place often.
Yeah.
It's very difficult for parents. It is very difficult.
What is the level of authoritarian blowback that parents can expect if they choose not to vaccinate? And not only that, but and the second part of that question is is it easy to get your kids into a school without having vaccination papers?
Yes, children can attend schools with no problems whatsoever without being vaccinated. They just need to, on the forms, they need to put that the child is not vaccinated. I think in some states you have to actually show some certificate or card or something. But in Queensland, you just, you know, when you're filling out the forms, it's all on there. I used to actually put right across the whole thing, toxic garbage, keep it away from my children or I'll sue you. And no one ever approached me about it, funnily enough. But we have had calls from some parents saying that they've had problems getting their children into childcare. But that shouldn't be happening because all of the childcare centres now do receive funding from the government and they should only have to fill out a conscientious objection form and then be allowed to go to the centre. But it's much harder to police the childcare centres because they're mostly private centres. But as far as schools go, they cannot deny you schooling.
I'd just like to point something out, folks. I've just, while you were talking there, I've just put vaccination into Google. Josh was talking about the, you know, the power of the internet, and I thought, well, how about I just put vaccination into Google? And this is a really interesting result, and this is something I've found often with the internet and with Google, is that in position number one, we get the Wikipedia article on vaccination, which generally has the officially accepted views. But in position number two, we have the Australian Vaccine Network, the Australian Vaccination Network, which is a movement against vaccination. Now, this is really important, folks, because Google works on the basis of a whole lot of metrics, which are quite rigorous and quite robust, that matches information with your search terms. And the fact that the Australian Vaccination Network has come up in position two on Google means that that is very relevant, very important information for that search term.
Exactly. That's a very good point.
And what does that mean? Well, it means it's much more democratic. It's much more, it's less susceptible to propagandizing because of the actual way search engines work is that they can only work by being genuine. You know, that's their power. And they have all these, I mean, Google's been working for years to get their formula right so that you do get relevant, important stuff that comes up on a search. And we've seen this over and over again, Stephanie, with different subjects that we investigate, where you'll get in position number two, you'll have information which you never see on the media, but it's in position number two on Google. Or sometimes quite often one. And you've got to ask yourself when you see that, is the media really telling you what's going on?
Oh, the media tells us nothing. It's amazing how little we get. We are so surprised that the death of the toddler up here in Queensland has received so much media, because usually it will be, if it hits the media at all, it will be buried on page, you know, 120 on the Sunday Mail in amongst the sports section or something ridiculous like that. So we are totally amazed at how much media coverage this particular issue has had at this time.
Yeah, well, the media is a funny one, because what usually happens if a couple of big papers decide to run it because they haven't got any other stories, then other media outlets feel like they have to run it because otherwise they're not as good as the competitors because they're not running a story that people find interesting. Because people do find this stuff interesting, and it sells papers. But there is a definite agenda of suppressing this sort of stuff. You know, for one, totally agree. I mean, there was that time that they had they have some interviewed, what was it, the Koshy and on telly, and it was just such a whitewash.
Indeed. Look, we've just about run out of time. Is there any just last things you'd like to say to help everyone out there? I mean, what can we do? What are the steps that we need to take? Because people need practical steps that they can take, whether they've got kids or not, you know, whether you're just a concerned citizen, whether it's about your kids, whether maybe it's your... there are all kinds of vaccines that they're recommending now for older people too. You know, what do we do?
Well, we just advise people to become very informed and take full responsibility for your health. You can't just shift the responsibility for your health onto a drug or onto a doctor or anyone else. It's time people stopped doing that and started taking responsibility. And what happens is, what we advise is that you just become very informed, because when you have all the information, you become very satisfied with your decision and empowered about getting through, you know, different situations that come up with children. I mean, I have people on the phone who are freaking out because their child has a temperature, and I tell them, just a temperature is a good thing. That means the body is working beautifully, you know. So it's about trying to take away this fear that, you know, parents have been made to feel so fearful and if anything's happening to their child, so that they run off to all these so-called professionals for the child to be fixed. And what happens is that then parents, you know, eventually don't feel that they can cope with any situation. So we try and reverse that by empowering people to realise what sickness is about. It's really just about the body cleaning out. It's just a set of symptoms about the body cleaning out, and to embrace that and assist that through with different things, whether it be homeopathy or herbs or whatever, water, whatever they, you know, sits well with them. And the more you do that, the more you become empowered as a parent to be able to take care of things. So it's not just about saying, you know, get the information and you know, make up your mind. You've got to really empower mothers, again, in particular, if they're the primary caregiver, that they can cope with a lot of these things that come by day to day with children.
Mm. No, very well said. Yeah. And is there a website that people can go to donate to help your cause?
Well, at the moment I'm just setting up the website. It's naturematters.info. It will be up and running hopefully within a week, but I am on email with growingawareness@hotmail.com, or they can call me on 3821 5454. And I send out, you know, lots and lots of packs of information free to people. They can join and get a newsletter, quarterly newsletter sent out. And we have an extensive library with books on all of the vaccination stuff and DVDs and all sorts of things. But there's, you know, hundreds of books there on health as well, because the answers to health aren't in the vaccination books. So we've got books on all sorts of things, natural child rearing and things. But if they contact me and get an information pack sent out, I send out our latest newsletter, and that tells them how they can become involved, whether it just be through membership or helping me at public seminars I'm doing, or people donate books to the library, all sorts of things. It's very good.
Yeah, I mean, this is real stuff people can do. You know, this is real stuff that can make you feel better in your own life. It's by helping out in great causes like this, and I applaud you for your hard work, and that's just really wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. I think that's really helped. It's really added to the body of information that we've been able to get together, and we'll put all your notes together. And when your website is up, please contact us, and we'll put it on Truth News.
Yeah, there's just one really last thing I'd like to say that's actually quite important, and that is that both parents need to become informed about this. It can't just be up to mums to do the investigation and the dads just say, oh, whatever you think, dear. Because what happens is parents end up in court if they break up, and then the fathers are trying to enforce vaccination through the courts because it has never become part of their belief system. What the fathers are winning, unfortunately.
Well, you know, the funny thing is I have that exact story happened, but the other way around. The father was really educated about this stuff, and the mother was pushing for this vaccination. They split up, and the father went to court, and of course the court just thinks you're crazy if you say you don't want your child. So the court all of us absolutely goes towards the other side. And then she, you know, got and the parents of the mother was really pushing for it. You're not going to get any inheritance if you don't vaccinate that child. And they really put the pressure on. It was like a religion. It was like this, they really, you have to do it kind of thing. And it was severe, and it almost drove my friend mad. Like he
was crying. It's got to be both parents making the decision. None of this one parent, whichever parent it is, has to be both.
Absolutely. Great. Well, thanks very much, Stephanie.
Okay.
Thanks for your time tonight.
Okay.
It was great. Thank you. Cheers.
Bye.
So
great. That was a superb interview. I really think. Yeah, we really had a great chance there to learn something new.
Yeah, I people out there, folks, if you like we said earlier, it is up to you to take charge of your health. You have only yourself to blame these days, and you know, if you're sitting there drinking Diet Coke because you think it's good for you, well, think again and go and research it, because. You know, it's every health is all you've got. Doesn't matter how much money you have in the world, health is all you have. Health and good friends, and so, you know, really, really do the research and empower yourself.
And look, most of the things about health are simple things.
Simple things, absolutely.
Eating well and getting enough exercise, and not letting stress take over your life. Those three things, those are just the key, you know,
some sunshine.
Well, sunshine, it's really important to get sunshine, folks. You know, I get it because I actually walk every day. So I get the morning rays of the sun. I'm kind of inside a lot during the day at work, but I often try to get out at lunchtime as well and get those rays. It's just, you know, they're simple things.
Eating at least, you know, 60% raw food.
I'm a bit of a failure on the raw food, so. But I would like to eat more raw food, but, you know, like, I do think you're probably right there. But I have to say, some people don't go for the raw food, you know, and if.
But whatever you can do, just do your research, folks, and whatever you're comfortable with. But it's time to stop blaming other people for your ignorance, because quite frankly, we're in the information age now, and ignorance, you know, unless you are absolutely so poor that you can't even go to the public library, which is free, to use the computer to look at some information. I mean, honestly, there's just no excuse for it.
Yeah, you've got to try it. Look, I might even give the raw food a go. I tell you the truth, I've been getting a bit sick of my digestion not being the way it should. I think.
Oh, it's just look, you know, superb. I might give it a go. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And you know, only just dip into it. You know, check
it out. Yeah, we'll give it a try. Look, just before we forget, there was a great comment that came in this week from one of our listeners, and I've got it up here. Gas for Gaza is the name on the comment. I've just listened to Herewood Josh with John Bursell's latest show. It really gave me the shits. Have I got your attention? Good. It gave me the shits because it only lasted 1 hour. I was enjoying it so much as I walked for miles on this beautiful autumn day, listening to the informative, inspiring and witty repartee on my much-loved iPod. So when the show was finished, I was pissed off. Another annoying thing about Herewood's shows is their infrequency. This causes problems because the shows are addictive. I have to wait for a whole week until I can download my next TNRA episode. So come on, boys, lift your game. We need a show every night. And all you need is some billionaire who loves your show to set you all up on 100 grand a year to make it happen. You will compete with Late Night Live. Regards, grumpy old man, age 65, who now has more hope for the future by becoming aware of young people who are so switched on.
Well, oh, thanks very much, mate. Yeah. It lightened my heart, that letter. I felt so chuffed all week. And we get lots of messages, you know, but that one really stood out, and and that's great. So,
and by the way, if there are any billionaires listening, come and speak to us. We would love to do a show every night. And
or even a millionaire.
Yeah, you don't have to be a billionaire. You don't have to be a billionaire. In fact, look, we've been going 2 years now. We've never taken any donations. I have actually now set up the new Truth News bank account and linked it to PayPal, and I'm about ready to open up, donations, and we're thinking about how we can, you know, make that package that in a way. I'm thinking about some kind of subscription thing where we provide some extra value, and I've actually got a really great idea for this. But this is kind of Truth News 2.0. Where the people who are subscribers to Truth News will be able to be contributors. They'll be able to be citizen journalists contributing, you know, because we'll have like articles and blog sections. So
next level.
Yeah, we're going to be taking it to the next level.
Yeah, bonus level.
So it's all happening here at Truth News Radio Australia.
TNRA, folks, get your friends amongst it, send it out, put it on your Facebook, put it on your blog, stick it on the bridge, near the car park, stick it,
scream it out, just scream it out on your way to work, from the rooftops, in the parking lots, you know, in the shopping malls.
Truthnews.com.au, and leave a message, check out the Twitter feed, subscribe to the Twitter feed. There's some amazing stories always, every day, popping up there.
Absolutely. Okay, well, we better sign off for tonight so we can get back to prepare the show for next week.
All right, folks.
Okay, cheers.
Until next week.
Yeah, thanks.
Good night, Australia.